Welcome to Asset Finance Connect's series of podcasts on the European asset finance industry. I'm Richard O'Donoghue, and for the past few months, I've been chatting to industry experts about the challenges and opportunities facing our industry in 2025 and beyond. As we move into the final few months of the year, we're going to keep those conversations going and continue to explore topics such as AI, partnerships, sustainability, and captives. Thanks to our sponsors, Alpha, for their continued support, and we tell you a bit more about Alpha later in the podcast. So today we're going to chat about the cloud. If we'd been doing these podcasts 10 years ago, every episode would have mentioned cloud services. However, today cloud is seen as business as usual. Yet in the past few weeks, we've seen outages at AWS and at Microsoft Azure, causing significant disruption to businesses. So have we got to a point where our dependency on cloud services is a real risk for asset finance companies? Who better to unpick this topic than Alex Barnes, who's the Director of Cloud Hosting at our sponsors, Alpha Systems. Alex, thanks for joining us today.
Hi, Richard. Great to be here.
So maybe just introduce yourself, tell us a little bit about your background, and tell us what a Director of Cloud Hosting does.
Yeah, absolutely. So I've been working at Alpha now for 17 years, and I started out as a software engineer, as many of us did, working on our version 5 Java platform evolution. So this was in around 2010, when the cloud as we know it today was kind of just getting started. So I was very interested in the early platform as a service offerings, and I was a beta tester of the Cloud Foundry private cloud product back when that originally launched. And this was kind of when I first started to prove that our product, Alpha Systems, was actually well architected to run on that type of platform without too much modification. So from there, I actually joined up with our sales team to build out a demo of Alpha Systems running on the Amazon platform as a service product, which they call Elastic Beanstalk, which actually is still running today. So then kind of after that, I kind of changed tack and moved out to the US and spent many years helping our US customers to be able to run Alpha Systems on-premise. Kind of during that time, it was kind of becoming apparent to me how cloud deployments were eventually going to really change the way that organizations were deploying and running services like Alpha and, you know, other business critical applications. So it was actually in 2017, I was kind of finally given the opportunity to lead the development of the Alpha Cloud service, which allowed me to put all of that kind of experience and kind of time working with our customers into building this new product where we were going to be running Alpha Systems in a single tenant cloud environment on behalf of our customers. So today I'm still very involved in the way that we use cloud services at Alpha. I work very closely with our company leadership team and our Amazon team to ensure that we're making the right choices about the cloud services we use and the way we use them. And to your final question, I guess, about what a director of Alpha Cloud does, I'm kind of just overall responsible for the operation and evolution of our platform around the world. So building out new features, looking at what we need to be doing to make sure it's resilient, making sure it's secure, and talking to our customers about what they need from the platform and how they want to be using it to run their businesses without worrying about the infrastructure behind it.
And maybe, you know, you mentioned 2010 when you kind of started to get into this and people were talking about the cloud at that point, and there was private cloud, there was public cloud, you have hybrid cloud, you have multi-cloud, you know, all these different clouds. But maybe talk about how did we get to this point where, you know, everybody now seems to have some form of cloud strategy. What's the history of this?
When I first started work after leaving university in 2008, we were still delivering Alpha Systems on the iSeries AS400 platform. And, you know, this offered very little in the way of automation, and everything was very manual. And I'm sure we all remember it was kind of these steps had to be done by teams made up of people who were very experienced or battle hardened to the process and had learned about it over many years doing the same things. And yeah, it was kind of, I guess my time at Alpha has kind of mirrored that kind of move, I guess, because it was when we first started to deliver V5 as a single web archive delivered via an SFTP site that, you know, we knew we were truly on the cutting edge delivering to commodity Linux hardware. And as we just said, you know, EC2, which is Amazon's Elastic Compute Service, actually first launched in 2006, which is probably a lot earlier than most of us realize, but it kind of didn't really gain any traction, I think, certainly in the industries I've worked in. until kind of, I guess it would have been 2015, probably, when some of our customers were starting to talk to us about, okay, well, we don't want to run this in our data center. We want to run this on Azure, or we want to run this on AWS. Can you help us? And, you know, at that time, obviously, we were just using very kind of standard features of the clouds, you know, things like compute servers and database servers, and, you know, really just taking things that we were using in data centers already and running them in the cloud instead. I think what I observed anyway is that three things kind of came along at the same time that kind of changed everything. They were the cloud, they were containerized applications using technologies like Docker, and they were infrastructure as code as a kind of movement. I think those three things kind of in tandem were, or sorry, in as a three were kind of instrumental in moving things forward. The cloud platforms transformed the long procurement cycles, meant that you didn't need to recruit and train teams and then maintain and own infrastructure over the long term. Containers allowed companies to run the same applications across all of their different environments, bringing that repeatability that was never there to begin with. And then this kind of meshed perfectly with using infrastructure as code to describe both of the above, so that you can just keep doing the same things over and over again and eliminating that kind of manual clicking to kind of set things up. It meant that you could do things a lot more quickly and eliminated the errors that came with those manual changes.
And was it speed and flexibility that drove companies to the cloud? I mean, what was the alpha experience? Were those the primary benefits?
Yeah, I mean, coming from that background of helping our customers to procure that infrastructure and run our product, it's kind of very easy to see why customers have moved in the direction of cloud deployments. You know, primarily it just allows them to move much more quickly.
Right.
You know, whether that's using elastic capacity to experiment with infrastructure sizing, if you don't know how big your infrastructure will need to be, or whether you need to create more environments to work in parallel, or simply just, you know, you want to do some innovation in a new area and you don't want to have to buy all the infrastructure and perpetual software licenses to do so. Being able to quickly and easily spin up and tear down that infrastructure as an operational expense, it just accelerates progress for everything that they're doing. You know, as a classic example, time and time again, we saw missed deadlines in our projects because there just weren't enough test environments, for example, as a very simple case. You know, lots of teams need to do lots of testing at critical moments. And if you've got a six month procurement timeline, then you know you're going to miss that deadline.
Mm-hmm. And how do you control it? I mean, because wasn't that one of the big initial concerns with moving to the cloud? Everybody was spinning things up and doing their own projects. I mean, did you face that issue in Alpha, trying to control the spend?
Yeah, I mean that is a very big part of it. And you do have to put in place, you know, proactive monitoring, and you have to have the right teams. And this is something we'll probably touch on again, I'm sure. But, you know, the cloud allows you to do almost anything and do it very, very well. And the flip side of that is that you do have to have the right teams in place in order to make the best use of that. So, you know, your technical operations teams need to be good at cloud networking and cloud security and making sure that you're using the right, you know, security methods to prevent issues with, you know, unauthorized access or whatever else. And then on the other side, you need some kind of cloud FinOps team, as they're quite often now known, which is the team that's actually looking at what's being spent and who's spending it and why they're spending it, and making sure that it's, as you say, you're actually budgeting correctly for what you're planning to do with the cloud.
Yeah, let's maybe pivot a little bit as well. We've talked about why people move to the cloud and why the cloud has been adopted so quickly and continues to grow. But we also hear a lot about data repatriation. So basically companies bringing things back from the public cloud and doing it either in their own data center or some other form maybe of private cloud. Does that suggest that, you know, there's a change in approach, or that the cloud, the public cloud in particular, is going to stop growing?
Yeah, so I think that is a good question. And certainly we've been hearing about data and workload repatriation for quite a few years. So I don't necessarily think that there is a large-scale repatriation of cloud workloads going on across the board. But what I do think is happening is that companies are starting to think more about cloud FinOps, as we just discussed, and thinking about the actual needs of the workloads that they have moved to the cloud. And I think that's especially true as kind of the flip side of the low interest rates we've been seeing over the last 5 years or so, when kind of moving things to the cloud was kind of perhaps done more than it should have been, just because that kind of operational expenditure wasn't really scrutinized in the same way. There are many steady state, well-established workloads with very predictable loads that just don't need the flexibility and elasticity that the cloud provides, and of course the overhead that it charges for that. So in those cases, the benefits that you get are perhaps not worth the premium prices. And especially if a company has never fully dismantled their on-premises infrastructure and teams, then they may well be looking at selectively moving some workloads back into their own data centers, ending up with some kind of hybrid environment. Clearly, that's a lot harder if companies have gone all in on the cloud and have fully dismantled that data center, and also the staffing and knowledge that goes along with that. I think the other thing that is discussed here as well is the big question mark around data sovereignty and kind of the dominance of a small number of hyperscalers in this market. I mean, that's each company has a different view about how big a problem that is, and whether indeed it is actually a problem for them. I think it's very likely that almost every company will land on some form of hybrid environment spanning one or more public clouds along with their own private infrastructure, which of course comes with its own challenges. But I also don't think that in today's fast-paced business environment, these companies are going to want to give up on the incredible opportunities for innovation and experimentation that they get from using the cloud.
Yeah, and it's back to your point about the speed and the ability to scale up very, very rapidly and innovate, as opposed to, you know, having to put teams together, having to buy infrastructure, etc. And it seems sensible that you would have a balance rather than maybe be all in on one particular approach.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the other thing is that companies are starting to want to use different clouds for different capabilities, you know, and AI has been a very big kind of part of that shift. You know, if a company thinks that one cloud provider is offering, you know, a much better set of services in one area, then they want to take advantage of that.
I knew we couldn't get through a podcast in 2025 without mentioning AI. It just come up. And I'm gonna resist the temptation to follow up on it, but I'm gonna go a different area, which is security.
No,
so again, one of the things that you hear a little bit about in public cloud, frankly or wrongly, and I'd welcome your opinion, is data security.
Yes, I think absolutely, and this is a topic that certainly comes up a lot. I think kind of my view on this is that obviously there is a belief that on-premises deployments are inherently more secure than those running in the cloud, perhaps partly because administrators retain more control. And I think perhaps this might have been true historically, and the cloud platforms perhaps didn't help themselves in the early days by allowing the default settings to allow more access than perhaps they should have done. But I think that's all kind of been tightened up now in all of the key areas that matter. And I think the reality of it is that public clouds allow you to be every bit as secure and perhaps even more secure than private cloud environments if you have the right teams and the right knowledge and you follow the right approaches. And private and on-premises infrastructure, because of its kind of isolated nature, it allows you to perhaps be accidentally more secure, if that makes sense.
Accidentally more secure.
You don't necessarily plan it, and you know the you accidentally by, you know, just by nature of its isolation, you end up in the place that you perhaps would have wanted to, rather than designing it in from the beginning, if that makes sense.
I mean, at a practical level, from an alpha point of view, how do you view, you know, your data? Do you have a hybrid cloud strategy, or what's alpha's business approach towards this?
Yeah, so when it comes to data, there's two different sides to this. There's of course the systems that we use to run our business internally, which we run in, well, we've been working to move those to the Amazon cloud, and that's because, you know, we want to be able to, there is a lot of elasticity in there, for example, in our software delivery pipelines that need to do an awful lot of testing at certain times of the day, or delivering software at specific times and not others. So it does take advantage of that scalability. And it takes advantage of the resilience as well of the public cloud. We'll perhaps come back to that in a second. And then the other side of that is the Alpha Cloud service, where we are actually running our software on behalf of our customers in isolation. And that is all done in the Amazon cloud, using a multi-cloud approach for storing backups. But we wouldn't ever want to do that on our own infrastructure, because we want to be able to onboard customers quickly, and we want to offer them the flexibility to have those environments when they want them and to tear them down when they don't want them.
Yeah.
So, the amount of infrastructure we're using at any given time varies massively. So the cloud is absolutely the right place for those workloads to be running for us.
Yeah. And it's back to the variability and the flexibility that you need, and that being That's the right. appropriate use case for the cloud versus trying to do it in your own data center. I mean, you touched on the word kind of resilience. And I guess, what we've seen with AWS and we've seen with Azure over the last couple of weeks with outages, it kind of comes back to the fundamental question. Are we overly dependent on cloud? Part one. And part two is, how do we, if we are going to continue using public clouds, how do we build businesses that are resilient from situations as have arisen over the last couple of weeks?
So to your first point, I think obviously these events over the last week or so have certainly brought this all into focus, and the impacts of those outages were very widespread and very well published. And obviously when these things happen, we hear very serious issues, and obviously we also get to hear about how smart beds also depend on the cloud, for example. But I think the key thing to bear in mind here is that, for in my experience anyway, that private cloud infrastructure isn't usually a very good resilience play, because whilst these big public cloud outages are very, very widely reported, it's because everyone's being impacted at the same time. Whereas when you do have a private cloud and a data center deployment, there are still issues, and they do happen perhaps just as frequently, if not more frequently. They're just not publicized in the same way.
Yeah.
And the costs of actually getting a private cloud infrastructure to in any way approach the resilience offered by the kind of the multiple data centers and the multiple regions and the expertise provided by these cloud providers is probably immense and probably never gets there. But what that means is that we do need to be ready when there is an outage in a public cloud environment. And I think perhaps what we sometimes see is that we're not doing enough to be ready for those events when they do occur.
And what can people do to protect themselves as best they can from those, say, an outage? I mean, I believe the AWS one was an outage in a data center in East Coast US. So how do you protect yourself if you're a European asset finance company from that sort of outage?
Yeah, so we'll perhaps come back to how we've tackled this in Alpha Cloud in a moment. But I think, the most important thing and the thing we all need to be doing up front is kind of planning for it, right? And getting and expecting it and practicing how you will kind of plan and respond to those events when they do happen. And the other thing that we need to be doing up front is understanding the applications that we run and that we depend on in our organizations, and working out what the resilience requirements are and what the impacts are for each of those applications, and having basically mapping that onto a plan or a set of technologies that allow you to have the right level of resilience. And then in the industry, we talk about RTOs and, how long it takes you to get an application back online. And it's basically understanding that at an application level. And this leads into the kind of the things that we offer as part of our Alpha Cloud platform, which are replicating data to a second cloud region outside of your primary region, for example, and then also replicating that data to a second cloud platform, as a really belts and braces approach to making sure that data is always going to be available no matter what. And then the third thing, and I don't think we kind of touched on this when we talked about infrastructure as code at the very start, but the idea that you can rebuild any application or in our case, our customers' complete infrastructure fully automatically in any region if we needed to. You basically combine those things to be able to say, well, if we need to evacuate this region because there's an issue, then we can do. and this is how we're going to do it, and this is how we practice it. And it's really kind of taking ownership, I guess, of that, of your applications and your requirements for them.
Yeah, and I think one thing you said that sometimes maybe gets overlooked is not every application is as critical as others, and you kind of define your resilience strategy based on the criticality, and some of them you might have a very highly resilient approach, and others you might say, well, it's not the end of the world if it isn't up and running for 24 hours, you know, I can survive without it. And I guess that's kind of your message, is you approach each application case by case.
Yeah, and that's absolutely right. This is how kind of DORA and the PRA material outsourcing guidelines start to come into this as well. They're forcing companies to actually take a good look at their requirements and then talk to their third-party suppliers like the hyperscalers and like Alpha when we're providing software as a service to our customers and asking, what is the RTO for this? How will you deal with an outage? How would you deal with, you know, at a very extreme example, how would you deal with one of the hyperscalers going out of business, for example? That's where our cross-cloud strategy comes in, all the way up to what would happen if Alpha went out of business, for example, and could no longer provide services to that customer. It's no longer enough to say, I'm sure it'll be fine. You know, these regulations are forcing companies to say, well, what would happen? And how would we deal with that?
So you mentioned a topic that I'm kind of loath to go into, but I'm going to ask you anyway, which is DORA. So just talk a little bit about that and how effective you believe it will be.
So, I mean, from my perspective, I think it's already been very effective. So I just mentioned a few of the kind of scenarios that kind of get included in this kind of regulation that are part of, you know, the things that organizations need to be looking at. And as a result of that, in the past couple of years, we've launched two new products in our cloud service to allow our customers to be ready for those things. One of them is what we've called Data Guardian, which is our approach to resilience. So that's replicating data to alternative regions, alternative clouds, and being ready to rebuild that infrastructure if we needed to. That's kind of one half of it. And then the other half of it is the cloud escrow option that we've also been working on with some of our customers, which is kind of taking our multi-tenant approach to running Alpha in the cloud and actually just allowing customers to take ownership of that running infrastructure in the event that Alpha was no longer able to provide services to them.
Right.
So, you know, I think it's been a very positive thing, I think, for us. It's kind of led to some very fruitful conversations. And I've been talking to our account team at AWS, who have been very interested in what we've been doing in this area. You know, it's kind of forced some conversations that perhaps might not have happened had it never come along.
Yeah, and it's an interesting perspective, because there's a tendency to think of regulation as being negative or something that we have to respond to and maybe we don't really want to, whereas you're sort of advocating that it actually forces you to think about things and think about resiliency and have conversations with providers and customers about it. And that's very, very beneficial.
Yeah. I think perhaps the reason I think that is that the, you know, these regulations are not very prescriptive, and that goes for the PRA guidelines as well as DORA. They don't go into any detail about how you need to be ready for something. They really just say that you have to have a plan.
Yeah.
And what that leads to with us certainly is that different customers interpret that in very different ways. So some will say it's enough to have had a conversation, and some will say we need a fully automated solution to ensure that we can exit from Alpha if you went out of business without any involvement from any other third parties. And you know, that's a very extreme range of interpretations.
So final question, Alpha, obviously you work in the asset finance industry. How mature is the industry in terms of its adoption of cloud technologies?
So a lot of the projects that we work on with our customers at Alpha are kind of systems replacements projects. And I think what we're seeing is that quite often Alpha systems and the implementation of it is often replacing one of the older systems within our customers' landscapes, often a mainframe system looking to move to version 6 of our software running in the cloud, which is obviously a huge jump. But I think quite often, because it's such a critical system, it can be one of the last to move. So what we see is that often we are integrating into a landscape made up of other cloud applications that have been added by these companies over the years. So what I'm saying there is that, you know, there has been a significant adoption of these products and of the cloud by our customers. But I think often, in our industry at least, we're often talking about software as a service running on the cloud rather than necessarily the cloud itself, if that makes sense. You know, the customers that we work with often recognize that they want to be delivering direct value to their customers, and perhaps they don't get that by running software themselves in the cloud. What they get is by buying a software as a service product like Alpha, you know, like any of the other software as a service products they use, they can kind of very quickly build out better experiences for their customers, you know, even quicker than if they were to do it on the cloud themselves, if that makes sense. So it's almost kind of turbocharged. So yeah, often we are working in a highly SaaS environment. So I think what we said earlier about a hybrid environment is that these companies actually have many layers to it, to this hybrid environment. They have the data center layer, they have their own cloud layer, and then they have the software as a service layer. And they all have a strategy that kind of outlines what they want to be running, what they don't want to be running, and what they want to be in the cloud and what they don't want to be in the cloud. And I think that is the right answer, and having that strategy in place is very important.
And I think that's kind of the overriding takeaway, I guess, from this conversation, is that having a strategy, planning for specific applications around resilience, etc., it's not a one-size-fits-all. There's incredible flexibility that the cloud delivers. But again, you need to know, what are you going to use it for? Does it make sense to use it for that purpose? Or, you know, should you be planning to use something else for different workloads, different applications? I think, look, it's one of those topics that we probably haven't talked about for 5 or 10 years. It's just kind of part of the furniture, as we might say. But it's been really interesting just to explore it a little bit further today. Very topical, obviously, given what's going on. And I think what you've said is reassuring as well, that, you know, there's an inevitability that we're going to have outages, and it's more that we need to plan for that outcome and plan appropriately for that outcome. And I think that that's probably the takeaway from our conversation today. So thank you for helping us unpick cloud technologies and what's been happening in the history of this. It's been really, really insightful. I was a bit worried at the start when you got all geeky that I was never going to follow the rest of the conversation, but thankfully you got back to plain English, and hopefully for our listeners, they'll appreciate that as well. So thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, it's been very interesting.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from Asset Finance Connect, sponsored by Alpha. We never planned to have a podcast about the cloud. However, we happen to be recording a podcast on the day of the AWS outage, and were unable to upload it at the end of the session. It was a real insight into the dependencies that we all have on the public cloud, many of which are invisible to us in our day-to-day lives. Following this experience, we thought it would be worthwhile to have a discussion about the cloud, and our friends at Alpha kindly volunteered Alex. Hopefully you enjoyed the conversation and learned something from it. We'll have a few more podcasts between now and the end of the year, so look out for these. In the meantime, thanks for listening, and please continue to send your suggestions for future podcast topics.